are the best. I know that your radio station, John, KPFK, is one of those. I can go to KPFK any time of the day or night, and I can get information which I can rely on because I've studied the issues which are being discussed, and I know what's bogus and I know what's not bogus. Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, and there are several other shows which give you similar kinds of information. I will start with Amy Goodman because she's direct, she's topical, and she brings people to her show knowledgeable and the myriad issues that are facing us that will give us some understanding and it will make us better able to deal with things. I think as well that I can't do things, but it's amazing what knowledge will give you. Knowledge will give you the basis to move forward if you're not comfortable with what's going on in the world, like starving children, dying children, things that we need to know. There's also a threat to the democracy of our country, which we don't know about, which is not being emphasized on commercial television. The fact that the president is trying to usurp the Supreme Court. It has to be fully gone through, researched, talked about, and how it may happen. It may happen to one day we'll all wake up and we'll find out that due process of law is no longer a function, that the president gets to decide what's what. And not even the Supreme Court can tell him.
On that note, Bill Maestas, attorney at law, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you again, John. Thanks.
This is John Crumshaw with a special Politics or Pedagogy education report.
On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission.
Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org.
90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. Progressive lawmakers, civil rights groups, and humanitarians responded with outrage and condemnation overnight and into Thursday after President Donald Trump announced a blanket travel ban on 12 countries and harsh restrictions on 7 others, calling the move a hateful and unlawful regurgitation of a policy he attempted during his first term. In total, the executive order from Trump's White House would impact people and families from 19 countries. 12 nations would face a total ban: Afghanistan, Myanmar, Chad, the Republic of the Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. People from 7 other nations would face severe restrictions: Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela. Democratic lawmakers, including Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, spoke out forcefully against the presidential order. Omar stated, quote, "This discriminatory policy is beyond shameful. Just like his first Muslim ban, this latest announcement flies in the face of basic morality and goes directly against our values. This racist policy will not make us safe. It will separate families and endanger lives. We cannot let it stand," end quote. While the order sparked fresh condemnation, it does not come as a surprise from the Trump administration, which has made xenophobic and racist rhetoric and anti-immigrant policies a cornerstone of its tenure. And meanwhile, a new report by 2 nonprofit groups entitled Danger by Design: How Climate Injustice Harms Displaced People at the U.S.-Mexico Border was released on Wednesday by the International Refugee Assistance Project and Las Americas Immigrant Advocacy Center. The report shows that the combination of the climate policies implemented by the Trump administration, driving migrants north to the U.S. border, and its ongoing anti-migrant policies driven by the border industrial complex is creating a human rights disaster as the United States restricts legal immigration pathways while simultaneously failing to address the climate crisis driving displacement. So with us today to talk about how the border industrial complex in the Trump era continues to inform and influence Trump's discriminatory and anti-immigrant policies, like his most recent travel ban against mostly Muslim majority and African nations, and how it all intersects with climate change, is our guest, Todd Miller. Todd Miller has written on border and immigration issues for the New York Times and Al Jazeera. And he writes a weekly post for the Border Chronicle. His latest book is Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to a World Without Borders. You can follow Todd Miller on Twitter at Memo Miller and view more of his work at ToddMillerWriter.com, which after this show, you're probably definitely going to want to do. Welcome to Middle East in Focus, Todd Miller. I'm so glad you can join us again. Todd, are you there? I think we're having some technical issues getting Todd on the line, but we're going to work on that right now. I'm not sure if some of you folks remember, but a few months back, we had Todd on the show to really highlight this issue around the border industrial complex, what that means and why that is so relevant, not just with respect to what we're seeing under the current Trump administration, but really what we've seen even with prior administrations to even get us to this point, and how the border industrial complex has really driven and informed immigration policies over decades with various administrations, such that the goal and aim has appeared to be, as we dive into this border industrial complex, the goal and aim has been about corporate profit, not about human rights and not about saving lives. And so we are still working on trying to get Todd onto the show. Again, unfortunately, we're having a little bit of difficulty right now getting him on the air. So hopefully we'll be able to fix that shortly. That said, I just want to remind everyone that you are listening to Middle East in Focus. We are independent radio, which means that it's because of you all, the listeners, that we can come every day, 24 hours a day, and bring you programming that you're not getting on other media platforms, including, quite frankly, even within other alternative media platforms, because we are truly, truly, truly independent, which is so rare these days. We don't get any corporate funding. We are not having to censor our programming. And so what that means is for all of us programmers, we can really be able to put forth conversations, topics within the media, with things that are happening around the world from a perspective that is rooted in truth and really trying to get out the facts and information to all of you, the listeners, so that all of us know exactly how we can take action and try to create the world I think all of us are wanting to see, wanting to live in. And the only way to do that is by ensuring that we are bringing forward information and truth so that we have the kind of knowledge we need to take the kind of action that will, in fact, be effective and allow us to create the world we all want to see. And part of that does include creating a world where immigration policies are one that's inclusive, that is truly rooted in human rights and is not rooted in corporate profit and greed and is not informed by the border industrial complex, which is really what we're going to talk about today. I think we were able to get Todd on the line. Todd, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Do you hear me?
Oh, yes. I'm so glad you're here. You're joining us. so happy that you can come back on Middle East in Focus and have a follow-up conversation around the border industrial complex. Your work is amazing, so I'm glad we get to share it with listeners. I'm going to dive right into our first question. One of the things you talk about in your recent piece, it's really looking at this intersection between the border industrial complex and climate change, is this idea that, and I'll just quote right from your piece, you say, quote, despite Trump's deep urge to erase global warming from consideration, climate displacement and border protection, two dynamics trending distinctly upward are on a collision course. End quote. So with that, can you first talk about what is climate displacement for folks who might not know?
Yeah, sure. Climate displacement is basically, you could look at it as the upward trending, as the quote said, dynamic of climate change and how it affects weather and weather systems and drought and extreme weather and all the things that a lot of people know about scarcity of water and how that then impacts people, sometimes as a last straw when they have a number of other problems or issues, and then causes people to be either displaced or to make the decision to go someplace else to be able to make ends meet. And to give you an idea of where we're at right now, that sort of collision course, I think, is already happening. If you look to the organization, the International Displacement Monitoring Center, the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, it estimates about 22 million people per year are being displaced due to weather-related hazards, mostly due to climate change. And that those sorts of numbers, the anticipation is that they will rise significantly. And there's a couple of projections out there, one for 2050, one that says that it will be about 230 million people on the move in that year. And then another goes as high as 1.2 billion people. Of course, it's the future, so you don't know. But it gives you a sense of how wide-ranging the debate is about how many people will be displaced. But what we can come to the conclusion is that there will be a lot of people in the current trend being displaced for all these different reasons, drought, sea level rise, extreme weather, and that's something we have to anticipate for the future.
And I apologize in advance in case you don't know the answer to this next question. You know, please feel free to just let me know, but I'm curious if you do. For the 22 million that has been reported as being displaced due to climate change, do you know what are the countries that might be most affected by this type of climate displacement?
So those countries change every year, depending on, you know, the numerous factors, including especially like hurricanes and typhoons and that sort of thing. I know that countries such as the Philippines and Bangladesh are usually at the top of the list. There are a number of countries in the African continent, especially sub-Saharan Africa, that usually make the list, a lot of times due to drought, for drought reasons. Central American countries like Guatemala and Honduras are generally towards the bottom of the top 10. And again, those are places where they're suffering a lot of drought, as well as extreme weather coming from the Gulf, because it's an isthmus and you have huge weather systems coming off either side of the peninsula. So those are some of the places. I know like climate change, as we know, is hitting everywhere. So it's hard to say, but according to these reports, they usually try to put what countries have been most affected. And those are the countries I generally see up top.
And with the Trump administration, can you talk about how the current Trump administration is actually worsening the climate crisis and therefore increasing the climate displacement issues that you've been talking about?
Yeah, I mean, just by not considering climate change as an issue, and that means, you know, not paying attention to it means no budget's going towards it or very little. a reduction of money going to possible ways of alleviating the impacts of climate change in places. No sort of effort is going towards reducing fossil fuel consumption, those sorts of things that exacerbate then what, you know, the effects of climate change, the dynamic of climate change, increasing it rather than mitigating it. And on top of that, the Trump administration, of course, is very, very much about bolstering border enforcement and immigration enforcement. And those two combined things become the dynamics of the quote-unquote collision course that you mentioned from the quote at the beginning.
So I now want to get into essentially exactly that and what you're beginning to describe as the border industrial complex. And for folks who might not have had the opportunity to hear our previous show where you were joining us talking about the border industrial complex, can you just give a brief overview? What is it? What is the border industrial complex? And how is the Trump administration addressing climate displacement through actually expanding and strengthening the border industrial complex rather than taking actions to address climate change?
Yeah, my argument is that the border industrial complex is precisely how the Trump administration and other administrations, we should be clear that it's very bipartisan. The Trump administration is taking the baton and taking it to its furthest extremes, but they are taking the baton of border enforcement as a way to address climate change. And you don't have to believe me. You could go, there's reports from the Department of Homeland Security that do talk about how looking into they make projections, looking into the future, looking at different, you know, what happens if there's over 2 degrees Celsius rise in temperature, what will happen? And if you look at, you know, you look at the different assessments, especially from coming from Department of Homeland Security, always displacement is mentioned, always migration is mentioned, and the only way they can consider anything to do with migration or displacement from a DHS perspective, which of course is the emphasis of the Trump administration, is to put more money into border enforcement. And hence, the border enforcement becomes the answer to climate change. Yes, you know, yes, there's going to be displacement. Yes, there's going to be people on the move. And because of this, we need to build more walls, or we need to put more technologies out on the border, or we need to bolster immigration and customs enforcement more. We need more deportation planes. We need to be able to deport more people. You know, all those things come in into the quote-unquote solution to climate change. And the border industrial complex is then the lucrative side of that, right? So there are companies out there that probably wouldn't admit this, but you know, this is in order to make profit, there has to be reasons for them to build infrastructure. A lot of times, technology such as surveillance towers, biometric systems, drone systems, robotic dogs, to name a few things, to them be placed on the border because of a quote unquote need. And the quote unquote need, if you go, you can go to different market forecasts. Market forecasts talk about trends of increasing migration, much like we were talking about earlier, oftentimes spurred by climate change, right? These sorts of trends, and they mention climate change in these forecasts as well, these trends are going to then build up what they call a homeland security market, or you could say border security market. And then when you read these market forecasts, they'll even go further and say, it's looking good. So looking healthy, you know, using words like healthy and good to describe a world in further turmoil because these companies will be able to get contracts and make money.
So in other words, the companies that are that make up the border industrial complex would describe essentially climate displacement as good for business.
That I'm sure I bet they would say it like that if you went and asked them. But I bet the I would put a lot of money on it behind closed doors that that's the kind of thinking. It comes out of the market forecast. Of course, they're public they all have public relations departments, so they probably wouldn't quite say it like that.
Yeah.
Or they might put it a different way. It's interesting too, because some companies will say we're on humanitarian aid missions. Like, for example, I go to these expos, right, where a lot of the companies go to that try to sell their products to Customs and Border Protection. And one of them is Verizon. Verizon was at one of them. I'm like, why are you here? So I started talking to them, like, you're a phone company. What are you doing here? And the whole first part of it was them telling me how they could go into places that needed humanitarian aid. So they go to a place that was nailed by a hurricane or something like that. And then I said, but why are you selling it to the Border Security Expo? Like, why? To enforce the border. And nobody could tell me. So they have this sort of first PR line of how we're helping the world, right? But then I went around to the back and ended up talking to this other guy who said, where have you used this on the border? This your Verizon home systems or phone systems. And he said, we set it up in a remote area where we were detaining children. This was several years ago that I had this conversation, but that gives you an example, right? They set up a phone system in a detention center where they're holding children, but they wouldn't tell me that. And when I was talking to the initial wave of people, and so like this humanitarian aid mission turns into, we're just another cog in the border enforcement apparatus.
Well, and what you're describing is essentially part of the title of your recent piece. It's like the upside down world. You know, it's George Orwell, 1984, calling war peace and peace war kind of thing.
Right.
So I want to get to exactly what you just brought up, which is the Border Security Expo. What is the Border Security Expo? If you can get into more detail about that. How is this year's expo compared to the previous years, considering the Trump administration's extensive anti-immigrant rhetoric, practices, and policies since January, including his most recent announcement of the new travel ban against mostly Muslim majority and African nations?
Yeah, so this year's Border Security Expo, and I should clarify, the Border Security Expo is an annual event, and it brings together the high brass from Customs and Border Protection, CBP, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, DHS officials, border county sheriffs, anyone who's involved in enforcement with private industry. And this year, there were about 225 companies represented, companies that are involved. It's actually a place you can go and watch the industrial complex happen right before your eyes. You watch the conversations between government and industry, how government will say we need this and this and this, and industry will respond. And so this is the place where that happens. And this year was probably the most enthusiastic, to use a term, that I have seen it. For example, Thomas Homan, if people didn't know, he's the border czar, whatever that means, the quote-unquote border czar, that's not really an official position. Sometimes governments appoint that. The White House appointed this Thomas Homan, who was an ex-ICE commissioner. He's gotten a lot of press, and he's like kind of Trump's right-hand man, so to speak. And he spoke. And also Kristi Noem, who's the secretary from the Department of Homeland Security. And everyone there was pounding this. We're doing great on the border. We brought border crossings down by 94%. We've done this and that. Now, every speaker, especially Noem and Homan, made people stand up and give a standing ovation to any agents who are working under the Biden administration, saying that now they're finally liberated, you know, almost using the language of liberation. And they can do their jobs now and that sort of thing. So there was a lot of that at this expo, and it's seemingly a lot of enthusiasm among the vendors. There were many ovations given, just spontaneous ones as the speakers are speaking and as they would bring up points like that. So it felt like it went to another level. And this was the first time that the actual secretary of the Department of Homeland Security had spoken at one of these expos, which also brought up the kind of stakes, and there was more media, there's tons of security, like different things that didn't happen in previous years.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we are talking about how the border industrial complex in the Trump era continues to inform and influence Trump's discriminatory anti-immigrant policies, like his most recent travel ban against mostly Muslim-majority and African nations, and how it all intersects with climate change, with our guest, Todd Miller, who's written on border and immigration issues for the New York Times and Al Jazeera America. He writes a weekly post for the Border Chronicle, and his latest book is Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to a World Without Borders. I hope one day we do get, in fact, a world without borders. So I hope we manifest your book, Todd. I again, very appreciative for your work and all your insight. I have two last questions I'm hoping we have time to get to. The first one is, can you talk about some of the companies that are profiting off the border industrial complex and what influence they have on U.S. immigration policies and enforcement practices? In other words, do these border industrial complex companies have lobbying power? And if so, which of these companies have the greatest influence and power within the U.S. government?
Yeah, they all have lobbying power, considerable lobbying power. And there are some pretty major military monoliths who have gotten contracts, like your Lockheed Martins, Northrop Grumman's, Boeing Corporation, who all are just have incredible amounts of resources to go into campaign contributions and to lobby when the appropriations debates are happening around the budget. There's also companies from Israel. I'm sure your listeners would be interested in that. Like Elbit Systems is one of the bigger companies that's gotten a number of contracts. And going in, if you go to Open Secrets, .org, I believe it is. Open Secrets does look into the different companies and how much lobbying power and how many campaign contributions that they make. And that's basically, you know, you can get like the stuff that they actually report. I suspect a lot of stuff is not reported, but you're able to get the glimpse at the power these companies have to influence what sort of budgets are then doled out each year, and then how much of those budgets actually goes to contracts. So it's a tremendous amount of influence, and its ability to get behind closed doors that most of us don't have.
Yeah, and I'm going to put out there two also private companies that really inform U.S. policies around detaining immigrant communities is CoreCivic and Geo. I mean, they make a lot of money off of these very repressive policies to detain, unjustly, quite frankly, detain non-citizens, and something we're seeing a lot of under this administration. Last question, what is the status of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act? How would this act worsen climate change, expand the border industrial complex, and accelerate the collision course that climate change and border protection are on? And we just have 1 minute.
1 minute. Okay. The status of that bill is that it was passed by the House, and now it's going to Senate, and the Senate will vote on the bill. The bill, I believe, will infuse $160 billion into ICE and CBP over the next 4 years, which is a considerable upsurge of money for border and immigration enforcement, which will include tons of money going to wall building, tons of money going to technology, and tons of money going further into deportation and detention infrastructure, including probably to the two companies you just mentioned, CoreCivic and Geo Group.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we have been talking today about how the border industrial complex in the Trump era continues to inform and influence Trump's discriminatory anti-immigrant policies, like his most recent travel ban against mostly Muslim majority and African nations, and how it all intersects with climate change, with our guest Todd Miller, who has written on border and immigration issues for the New York Times and Al Jazeera America. He writes a weekly post for the Border Chronicle. His latest book is Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to a World Without Borders. And you can also check other writings and work from Todd Miller at his website, toddmillerwriter.com. You can also check him out on Twitter at Memo Miller. Thank you so much, Todd Miller, for joining us again on Middle East in Focus.
Thank you so much, Negwa. It was great to be on.
I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for joining and tuning in to Middle East in Focus today and every week that you support us and keep making us independent radio. It is only through you, with you, in collaboration with all of you that we exist. So thank you, thank you, thank you. You've been listening to Middle East in Focus, and our theme song is the Overture.